Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome to this very special episode of the
Geek Buddies!
I say special because we're coming to you on a weekend. That's right, we're coming to you on a weekend, a little weekend content for you all to hang out with us and have a little geek fun. Talk about everything going on in the world of geekdom this week. For sure, we're going to get into some fun trailers that dropped this week and get into some stories about Marvel, a lot of Marvel stuff. We're also going to drop a little conversation about a recent sex study that was done that we think we're going to connect to geek
sex.
Nerd stuff. Yes, so trust me on that. And our main topic is going to be our thoughts on what we're going to see next in the final two episodes of season two of Loki. So there is a lot to discuss here. But first, let's introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw John Roca, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies.
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm a television actor and an animation writer, where you can see some of our current work right now every weekend with the third season of Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City.
And Shannon, you were recently a guest on a podcast. You want to plug that real quick?
I was. Two delightful young gentlemen who actually met on TikTok. I was chatting with them beforehand. Oh, wow. And they were like, yeah, we became friends through TikTok and decided to do a podcast together. And, you know, I should have picked up from the name, but as we were chatting, they are both big Back to the Future fans, and they call their friends the Pinheads. And I was like, I immediately went to Hellraiser, and I was like, oh, Marty's band. That's great.
Well, you've been spending your nights thinking of Hellraiser with Pinheads, that's for sure. But it is Halloween season, so it makes sense. But yeah, anyway, we're going to get into things here. But yeah, listen to Shannon having that conversation with those two gentlemen there at the Flix Capacitors. Fun stuff. But we are going to get into it all. The way the show works is each of us brings up a geek news item. We talk about it amongst ourselves, take a couple of breaks, and then we'll get into our main geek news item, which is, of course, as I said, a Loki conversation. Michael, you're starting us off here with some big Marvel stuff. What's going on?
And we're going to call this the Marvel grab bag today. We got a lot of Marvel news to just sort of touch base on really quickly. Let's start with Deadpool 3. Mm. Sean Levy has offered some details about Deadpool 3 coming up. He recently was on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast and was talking about how emotional the new Deadpool movie was going to be. He said that there's a fuck more load of emotion than you think. The movie has a lot more character depth and heart than anyone is expecting. And then he goes on to explain that both he and Ryan Reynolds were really united that they wanted Deadpool 3 to feel like it felt like the first Deadpool movies, while at the same time, they wanted to see where it could evolve into. Particularly when they knew that they were going to have a Wolverine Deadpool movie, he said, look, once we knew it was a Wolverine Deadpool movie, God, what a gift to any storyteller, because not only do you have two icon actors playing their most iconic roles, but you have two characters whose dynamic is already famously fraught. Like, anytime you start from a place with two characters with deep dislike and conflict and differences from each other, you know, you've got the mouth and the surly, laconic man of few words, what a great formula. And while he didn't say who was going to make cameos in the movie, he did say how easy it was to get people to cameo in the movie. He said, what blew my mind was how easy it was to get these cameos. People love Deadpool. People love Ryan. People seem to like my work, thank God. And they know that Ryan and I are in a really good groove, a creative brotherhood, and it's unique, and they're excited about doing it. So a lot of really interesting information there, mainly... You know, if you've been a fan of what Ryan Reynolds and Sean Levy have been doing together and Sean Levy's work in general, I think that it bodes well for Deadpool 3. I think a lot of people, I think I'm not in the minority here, Deadpool 1, amazing. Yeah. Deadpool 2, very funny. but maybe didn't quite have the magic. And I think that adding a little bit of heart, a little bit of this movie actually means something, along with all of the funny, R-rated, ridiculous comic book humor, adding in all the cameos and the multiversal craziness of it all. You know, Deadpool 3 is another one of those movies. We talked about it with Spider-Man No Way Home, and we were wrong. We talked about it with Multiverse of Madness, and we were right. But that sometimes when you pile so many things onto a movie, it can collapse on itself. And Deadpool 3 is, based on what we've seen, definitely in danger of that being a potential thing. And so I think that them kind of sticking to an emotion thing and really sticking to this being a character piece is good news for everybody. Gentlemen, you excited Deadpool 3? Not excited? How you feeling?
Well, no, I definitely am. I mean, I think the thing that I think we might forget from time to time is with Deadpool 1, it's ultimately an oddball love story. You know, the whole first act of that movie is Wade and Vanessa's romance, and love comes in every, you know, love has every color. I mean, you see the way that the way that their courtship worked. And the revelation that Wade has this, you know, disease, you know, like that's what kickstarted the movie off. I mean, so I feel like in Deadpool 2, I don't know if the dynamic between Deadpool and Julian Dennison's character really worked. It was like, it was awesome to have Josh Brolin in as Cable. It was awesome to have Zazie Beetz in there as Domino. But the relationship didn't quite work, even though you had a really funny ending with Deadpool going back and fixing some mistakes from the past. Making this sort of a midnight run like movie with Wolverine, I think is really, really, I think that's a great idea and potentially really, really funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited about it. I mean, the only cameo that I think they have confirmed is Jennifer Garner is coming back as Elektra. And you know, while I certainly liked that first Daredevil movie when it came out, it has not necessarily aged as well for people.
It ages like fine milk. John, based on your smirk, I feel like you are less inclined to be excited about this one.
I mean, I liked Free Guy. That's Sean Levy, right? So I liked Free Guy. And that certainly had a lot of interesting cameos and appearances and working through different worlds and making them work. And I liked that. I didn't necessarily 100% like the one that came after with Garner, I think, and the ship.
The Atom Project?
Yeah, the Atom Project. I was a little like, this feels what I worry about when you get comedians like this together and have a certain sensibility and they create something that's kind of mid. So I'm excited to have Hugh Jackman be a part of this. Hugh Jackman, by all accounts, one of the greatest guys, one of the nicest guys. So I'm sure he was excited to be a part of this with Ryan, and they've had great back and forth over the years since the first Deadpool movie on social media and what have you. So to see this come to fruition, I'm excited for it. I'm curious to see what cameos are going to pop up. I'm curious how they're going to play it. As you said, Michael, the Multiverse of Madness cameos really got messed me up. I worry about how they're going to make it work. And everyone's so freaked out about canon. How are these cameos going to be used and not be canon or be canon? Like, is Elektra appearing now? Is Jennifer Garner a canon Elektra in the MCU? So there's a lot of questions that I think they're going to have to figure out. And of course, maybe they can get away with it because it's a multiverse situation right now. So I'm curious to see how that's all going to work. I don't know if I trust that they're going to land the ship as effectively as I hope they can land the ship. I'm living in hope, but I'm cautiously optimistic. I will say that. But I like what Sean said about the connections and the relationships, because as Shannon alluded to, those are the things that we enjoy about Deadpool, is the romance that he had. It didn't 100% work because I don't think David Leitch does a really good job with relationships in his movies necessarily. But Sean does have that heart, right? And so I hope that they get that right, because those are things that bring us back. Yes, the sarcasm, the jokes, and the meta and all that. But it's the emotion and the relationships that really connect you to these characters. So hopefully they've got that right.
Well, if you guys like cameos, I've got a story for you. We have also got some rumors coming out that Grace Randolph reported on X that a last minute surprise is being added to the Marvels, but it's not clear what it is. And with the actor strike going on, it's probably not some cameo that they just shot. And if they shot it a long time ago, it's not a last minute surprise. So a little bit of confusion what this last minute surprise could be. But Scooper Daniel Richmond offered a better explanation, saying it is a cameo. It's someone who was the perfect casting for a certain role and never got his chance to do justice with it because they wasted him on a shit movie. And that character is coming back. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
And in the world of social media, that's all you need to say to get Marvel fans going absolutely batshit insane with their theories. So there might not even be a cameo. This last minute surprise could be it comes up on screen and says, hey, guys, whatever. They typed something. Like, who knows? But we love our Marvel fans speculating. So if there were to be a cameo in the Marvels, and if it were a character who was perfect casting but was in a shit movie, do you have any guesses who that might be?
I have seen speculation. I'm not going to say the person, but I've seen speculation online that if this is true, I don't know how they're going to make this work.
Well, you have to say it now.
Well, I'm just going to say toss salads and scrambled eggs. I'm just going to leave it at that. And that's what I'm possibly hearing. But it's an interesting premise because to me, nothing says we are fucking scared no one's going to see our movie. Like, let's put Henry Cavill in at the end of our movie and hopefully people show up. And
well, but we know from history that worked really well for Black Adam. So it's probably a good plan.
Yeah, Michael just took my next sentence out of my mouth, but said it much better than I could for sure. So yeah, exactly. And that's my concern here is this a cheap ploy to get people to see the movie because it is tracking terribly, not terribly in terms of overall, like if this was a regular movie and making a 70 million possibly or 50 million, but it is not tracking well for a Marvel movie. And I think that's a big concern. So dropping these things, using Scoopmeisters to drop these hints out for people to get excited, I think is a bit of a ploy by Marvel. And I don't know if I like it because if you're doing this kind of desperate stuff that mirrors what DC did with Black Adam, that doesn't bode well for you overall as a company and where you're at as Marvel and also for this movie, which I think is a sad thing because a lot of people are trying to get people to see this movie because it is a female Black filmmaker getting a first chance to direct a Marvel movie with three women in the lead and a fourth woman being the villain. And so there's a lot of positivity in terms of diversity in this, but overall the speculation is that it is not an overall great product. It's a decent to maybe good product, but not great. So this makes it feel even more so that it's a decent to good product, but not great. Shannon,
well,
what do you?
Maybe Kelsey Grammer will be the their saving grace.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, Hank McCoy's Beast. That's what's going to get people in the theater.
I mean, if that's true, that would be such a colossal misstep. But anyway.
So to push back on Johnny's theory, because I feel like Kelsey Grammer got his redemption in Days of Future Past. I think when he showed up at the end, I was like, that was a great way to use Beast. That was a great way to use Kelsey Grammer as Beast. This theory, we'll call it a stretch.
Wait. I'm not saying the Beast. That's other people's theory. Don't give me that theory. I did not.
No. It's you. So my theory is a bit of a stretch.
Okay.
I don't actually believe it, but with the evidence that has been presented, we know that Monica Rambeau knew a scientist who was gonna give her some crazy vehicle. Everyone was expecting Reed Richards. So what better way to announce the first part of your Fantastic Four cast than Miles Teller showing up as Mr. Fantastic at the end of this movie?
There is no way they're going to touch that movie.
They said it was a shitty movie.
Yeah, the boxes are checked.
You look at his work in The Offer and Top Gun Maverick. It's like, all right, maybe Miles Teller is Reed Richards. Again, I don't really think this is it, but looking at the evidence that is on the board, it's like, okay, we could go here. Yeah,
interesting. Interesting.
I honestly can't think of what it would be. And also,
well, it doesn't have to be you. It can be like John. It's somebody you heard.
Yeah. I'm going to show you the.
But you Reddit. Know, it's like, I know that I'm going to like plead the fifth and not guess anything. Cause like you guys pick it's if you're going to go shitty movies, it's a mutant or it's Fantastic Four. And I don't see how it would be so desperate given this is a movie about cosmic alien shit, like what, like, you know, like Carol Danvers is off in space, like bringing in some alien threat, bringing in Kree, bringing in Skrull stuff, bringing in some alien thing, great, but like throwing mutants or the Fantastic Four in, I would just be like, boy, it would be the Henry Cavill at the end of Black Adam. Like it would just feel so, it's not what a post-credit sequence should be. So I'm gonna guess that it's not this at all. I'm going to guess that it's not this at all, and they're not going to do that. Like, that's going to where I'm going to weigh in.
So you think there's no cameo that's from a shitty movie and a person reprising their role or anything?
I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't – I mean, I will say, because I feel bad even saying this, but like Shannon bringing up that fucking scientist from WandaVision, because that was when we were all in the pandemic and we were all a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And so everything that they said, we're like, this is it. And when she talked about that scientist –
yeah.
To give you guys both, it's maybe it's Reed Richards, maybe it's Hank McCoy. They're both good. So like if Kelsey Grammer, not in blue fur, showed up as a scientist, I would be, and his name was Dr. McCoy, I'd be like, yeah. Like I don't know that it was gonna blow me away. Marvel's back, baby. Like I don't know that.
So we'll see.
But
no,
yeah, go ahead. In a little bit of not big news, but right. exciting news, you know, we're all the saving grace of the Marvel Universe is a young guy in New York City named Peter Parker. And No Way Home is probably the best that Marvel has been recently. So obviously we are all anxiously awaiting more news about Tom Holland's Spider-Man. And with the strike and the writer's strike and the acting strike going on, everything has gotten pushed back. But it does sound, rumors are saying that it does seem like there is a start date for production in 2024 for a Spider-Man 4, and that Tom Holland and Zendaya and everybody are attached, and that John Watts looks like he's coming back to direct. Now, none of this is confirmed by Marvel. None of this is confirmed by anybody, but the rumor mill is swirling, and it does seem like we will get that. And I think it's a foregone conclusion. I know that Tom Holland was going around during his Uncharted press tour saying he wasn't sure if he was going to continue on with Spider-Man, but like,
yeah,
there's a money truck. And it's a big money truck. And the way that they ended that movie, there's more Spider-Man. So I think we will see more Spider-Man. And you know what? If they're starting production in 2024, then maybe that gives us a 2026 Spider-Man movie. And that's probably going to be right when Marvel needs Spider-Man most. So it's probably a good thing. And then really quickly, our last bit of information is that Marvel, in the rumor mill, also nothing confirmed, is starting development on Thor 5. But the more interesting piece of information here is that they are looking for a director to come in and helm Thor 5, which kind of means that they're not going with the director. Now, whether that is Taika Waititi has done what he wanted to do and is moving on to bigger and better things, whether the box office reception and fan reception to Thor Love and Thunder made them think they wanted to go in a different direction, it seems like if Thor 5 does move forward, it might be with a new director. And what's really interesting about this is Entertainment Weekly was recently interviewing Chris Hemsworth, who seems to have made enough money that he now just gives no shit what he says in interviews and just says whatever's on his mind, which is great for everybody. And he has no idea what the future has in store for Thor, But he does say that if there, he wants a potential Thor 5 to be unpredictable. And he doesn't want to risk playing Thor for so long that Marvel fans start rolling their eyes. And he goes, I have to be careful how I word this because I have no idea what's happening in the next phase. But there's always conversations. He goes, I don't want to continue to do it until people are so exhausted that they roll their eyes when they see me come up on screen. If an audience wants to see it, and if there's something that we have that's exciting and fun, great. I love being able to reinvent that character a few times. I don't know what the answer is yet, but I would love to try and figure it out. And when it comes to Thor, Love, and Thunder, he says, I think we just had too much fun. It just became too silly, which I think we would all agree is 100% accurate. And he says, it's always hard being in the center of it and not having any real perspective. I love the process. It's always a ride, but you just don't know how people are going to respond. And he also said his biggest critics were his son's friends. He said, a bunch of 8-year-olds were critiquing my film. They all said they thought it had too much humor. The action was cool, but the VFX weren't as good. So his son's friends basically agree with most of us. But what he also said that was interesting about playing Thor is that he said, I love the fact that I've been able to do something different throughout the process. Thor 1 and 2 were their own thing. Thor 3 and 4 were a very different feel. And then even Avengers was really different. And he's, you know, that if he gets to continue to do Thor, he's done those Thors and he would want this new Thor to be something different, which... honestly, I think we're all in agreement with Chris Hemsworth on. So, yeah. Gentlemen, Thor 5 with no Taika, Spider-Man 4, thoughts?
Give me a Thor, and I speculated about this on the hot mic. Give me a Thor directed by Robert Eggers, who did The Northman. Give me a balls-out, full-on, uber-male warrior Thor. I'd like to see that take. We had Baldur the Brave teased on Loki, of course, and there's weird stuff about that. Who knows if that's going to be in there? Beta Ray Bill was alluded to possibly. So there have been certain things you could allude to and play with, and I wonder if maybe going far away from the more comical aspects of Waititi's approach, which I liked, by the way, to a more, you know, John Wick type of approach, I think would be real interesting, where he's more of a stronger kind of male presence trying to get this stuff done, a Northman type of approach, a very Nordic, you know, we've seen the Vikings go on for multiple seasons and people love that show. So it could be real interesting to go that route with Thor. And I think Hemsworth definitely has that ability in his resume as an actor. So I'd like to see something like that. And even if it's not Robert Eggers, could be some other director comes in. But something more like that, I think, would be a fun way to reinvent the character and bring back, for the love of God, bring back Lady Sif, for fuck's sake. Jamie Alexander, bring her back into this.
She's in Thor 4.
Fighting once. Huh? What's that?
She's in Thor 4.
Well, most of her is in Thor 4.
I was just going to say missing an arm. But yeah, Janet said it much better yet again. Go ahead, Janet.
I mean, I think Thor 5 without Taika is probably the way to go. And I imagine both parties probably feel that he was nominated for an Oscar. His next goal wins, looks really, really good. I think he's probably had his fill of Marvel and probably wants to go and do something else. If he dips his toe back into big franchise filmmaking, it might be that Star Wars movie that he is still reportedly writing and developing. As for who, I'm not really sure. I mean, I think there is a possibility at the end of Love and Thunder, you know, Thor's got a daughter that he's raising. And I think there is a possibility that, the final Thor film could be just a passing of the hammer over to this daughter. Is this like, kind of like how, like with Hope, in Ant-Man, like Hope was a new character, correct? Hope Van Dyne was a new character, or was she always in Marvel? I mean, it was always Janet.
Hope exists in the Marvel comics, right?
She exists, yeah.
Okay, see, I did not know that. I thought it was always just Hank, Scott, and Janet. Okay. But, I mean, I think there's an opportunity to possibly give us the mighty Thor that we didn't really get with Jane Foster and Natalie Portman. I think there's a way for the daughter to, you know, take Mjolnir, give us Thor going forward. It's just not Chris Hemsworth. Despite the fact that I do feel like with Ragnarok, with his work in Infinity War and in Endgame, he really found a not just a comedic sweet spot, but I feel like we got some of the best emotional acting that we've seen from Chris Hemsworth in the Marvel films. That's not to say as an actor he could never do it. It's just we finally got to see that. And with Love and Thunder, a lot of that stuff kind of got it, as he said. I mean, it just got a little too silly. And, you know, there is a deleted scene from Love and Thunder where Thor and Zeus are having like this heart to heart and Zeus gives him the lightning bolt. And so it's like, if your movie went through that drastic a change, it's like, okay, you all really changed a lot.
I think two things. I think one, if Chris Hemsworth is coming out in an Entertainment Weekly interview and saying, I think it got a little too silly, chances are everybody agrees with that behind the scenes. Like, I don't think Chris Hemsworth came out and said that and Taika Waititi is sitting somewhere and he's like, what the fuck? Like, I think like they've all like, I think, you know, and it is like, this does happen. You do lose perspective. And it does sound like they had a fucking blast making the movie. But I think that came out and they kind of saw the response and everyone was like, oh, okay, yeah, we overshot. Which is kind of what we all said coming out of the theater. So in a way, it kind of makes me feel good. Like, you always get that, like, do they think this was... It's the same thing what we talked about last week when the article, when the story came out that Marvel was blindsided by Quantumania.
Yeah.
That we kind of said then that, like, okay, well, then with Thor, Love, and Thunder, I think they probably weren't shocked that we were all like, this isn't quite right. I don't know who the director would be. I kind of like to look at it more from like the studio side, like what's on the table. Mm-hmm. Like, to Shannon's point, Thor has a kid, post credit sequence with Brett Goldstein as Hercules.
Yeah.
Jane Foster, not out of it yet. She's dead, but she's not dead.
Right.
And I actually like what John said about the Viking aspect of it, but I would think of it more like, what if you told a story that was, all right, here's what's going on. We've got Hercules. We've got Jane Foster's back. Maybe we've got Thor and his kid and he's living his life. But something happened from Thor's past and we actually get to see these flashbacks to like back in the day. Like, bring back Tom Hiddleston. Bring back Anthony Hopkins. Bring back Russo. Like, let's see some old like Norse shit and then kind of have some modern day. So I think there's like a lot of really great opportunities. There's a lot of good story there. Whether they find it or not, we'll see.
Yeah, what's his legacy? That's a great point. Could bring back even Cate Blanchett. It may be in a little bit of a cameo. That could be fun, for sure. All right, anything more, Mike, on the Marvel side, or are we good?
That is all we got for now, but stay tuned, because the Marvel rumor mill, it don't ever stop.
All right. Well, I am actually changing my subject, and I'll tell you guys about it. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with my stuff right after this. Hello, Geek Buddies fans. Before we jump into today's episode, let's give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Marquee TV. Their support is why we're able to bring this podcast to you. Marquee TV isn't just any streaming service. They're your gateway to an incredible world of arts and culture.
That's right, Johnny. I've explored Marquee TV, and I've been amazed by their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. It is a treasure trove for any arts and culture lover. Right now, I'm in the middle of watching the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of The Tempest, and I've also got my eye on that Shakespeare masterclass taught by Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, Shannon, and speaking of the RSC, I watched Christopher Eccleston's performance of Macbeth last night, and I'm going to jump into Kit Harington's performance of Henry V from the Donmar Warehouse.
Imagine having the world's most breathtaking ballets, dramatic theater productions, and magical operas at your fingertips. That's the experience Marquee TV offers, making the arts accessible wherever you are.
And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents with the code BUDDIES, B-U-D-D-I-E-S. Simply visit Marquee.tv and use the promo code BUDDIES to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. Get 3 months for just 99 cents. Visit Marquee.tv to start your journey into the world of arts now. Use code BUDDIES.
Explore the extensive library of performances on Marquee TV today and keep up with the latest in art streaming by following at Marquee TV on social media.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Oh man, I have no idea what to hum. I don't know what's coming.
All right. Well, let's come back here. Now, I know, Jeff, I was going to talk about the sex study, but actually I'm going to shelve that. We're not going to talk about that because this is some breaking news.
But
now,
I was already to sing, let's talk about sex, baby.
I know you did. That's what God damn it. Could have sang. You're right. I'm sorry. But earlier this week, Mission Impossible 8 was delayed to 2025, and they changed the title. They say they're going to change the title from Dead Reckoning Part 2 to something else and fool us. But and we know the strike is still ongoing, but as we're recording this, two things have broken in the recording. So I want to get you guys' thoughts on this instead of the sex scene study situation there, which is fine to talk about, but we won't talk about it. Warner Brothers has pushed Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom 2 days from December 20th to December 22nd. Instead of making it a 5-day rollout, they are now only looking at it as a traditional 3-day opening of in theaters, and it's giving it a little bit of extra space away from Wonka, which is debuting just a few days later on December 15th. They also have The Color Purple coming out on Christmas Day, Warner Brothers does. So this is interesting, gentlemen. Pushing it 2 days, what's the logic behind this? And there's another push, which I'll ask you to speculate on just a second. What do you think about this pushing 2 days? Does this show even less faith in the movie?
Or... Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead. Yes.
Yes. Like, they're just like, guys, just get it out. Let's just get it done. Like, they're like, because, you know, like when you do the Wednesday release.
Yeah. Your faith.
The goal is that you're going to say over its release of the long holiday weekend in four days, it did this much. And then they always come up with, like, you know, it. No superhero movie starring a guy in an orange and green jumpsuit made this much money in this weekend ever in the history of the bot. Like, they'll come up and, like, there's like, guys, there's no story. Let's just get it out. Like, I don't, you know what the story is going to be, is that the movie is stinky and nobody went to go see it. That's the, so like, whether we release it on Wednesday or Friday, let's put it out on Friday. Like, who gives a shit? Honestly, it just feels like they are just like, we can't, like, it's like they know that this is the end of it.
Oh yeah.
Like, for better or for worse, once this movie is done, once they get to the new year, they're like, we don't have to deal with any of this. It's James Gunn and Peter Safran or bust. Like, it's Superman Legacy or bust, and that's all we got to worry about. And they just want to be fucking done with it.
Yeah, Shannon, is this like your last date with the person you broke up with? You got to meet up with them, but you try to, like, push it to farther and farther to where the coffee date's only like 30 minutes when it was going to be like an hour or 2 hours. What does this feel like to you?
Well, I mean, I certainly don't disagree with Michael's summation of the situation, but I just Googled when the winter break is for LAUSD, and it starts on the 20th. So if you have the 20th and the 21st where kids are on vacation and you can get them into the theaters, get them into the theaters a little extra time for Wonka before, you know, Aquaman comes out on the 22nd. Yeah. That's kind of my thought, is that it just gives them a little bit more time. Okay. With Aquaman not cutting into Wonka's box office. All indicators point that they just want to take this out behind the shed and give it to behind the ear.
I do like John's analogy. It's the, hey, you know how we were going to have dinner on Friday? How about we do dinner on Thursday? Actually, what if we do lunch on Thursday? You know what? How about we just grab coffee Thursday morning? Hey, can we just do a FaceTime real quick? Can we just do a FaceTime? Let's just FaceTime.
I'm so sorry. Can we just do a FaceTime?
I'm so sorry.
This person came into town. I did not even know they were coming. And now I've got to maybe do that.
Oh, God.
Godzilla, can we not meet at the bar? Anyway. the other thing I want to get your thoughts on, and this is kind of big and kind of a little bit Marvel related, because earlier this week, the Jonathan Majors case has been green-lighted. It is going to happen, I think, at the end of November is when they're going to start doing the case. We were originally going to talk about it, but I kind of pushed it a little bit. But now it's connected here because Disney announced that they are moving Magazine Dreams off of their release calendar. It was supposed to come out later on this year in December. And that Snow White, the Rachel Zegler Snow White, written by Greta Gerwig, directed by, is it Mark Webb, is going to be pushed now to March 21st of 2025. 2025 is where they're pushing it to. It was supposed to come out in March of next year, March 22nd. It is now being pushed to 2025. And Elio, the Pixar science fiction animated adventure film, has also been pushed back a year from March 1st, 2024 to now June 13th of 2025. This is some terrible news, I think, for Elio. The Cinderella thing, I think, makes sense because Zegler is
Snow White.
Snow White is kryptonite right now with some of the comments and what have you. Although Greta Gerwig with Barbie, you would want to take advantage of that a little bit, but the situation is that it is. Jonathan Majors' Magazine Dreams, that is no surprise to me at all that they just pulled it completely, because apparently there's another case in London that they're trying to loop into this New York case. So a lot of drama around that. Gentlemen, your thoughts on the pushing of Snow White, Elio, and the pulling of Magazine Dreams?
I mean, the Magazine Dreams thing, as you said, that's not a surprise. Depending on the outcome of this case, that movie may never see the light of day.
Right.
Certainly. For everyone who worked on that movie that wasn't Jonathan Majors, it sucks, because that was being kind of positioned as an awards contender.
It was a hit coming out of Sundance. You're right about that.
Yeah. The Snow White, the delaying it a year. Like, that's really surprising. She has that the Hunger Games prequel coming out, and it's like, do we want to get a little space from that, or is it just because of some of the comments that she's made that have not come out well, that Disney feels the need to put a little bit of distance in between her comments, and hopefully by the time that the strike is settled, there will be some other thing that people have gotten mad about, and they will have forgotten some of the tone deaf things that she has said as a younger performer who may not be as skilled with the press. And there was, what was the third thing, Johnny?
Elio.
Yeah. Being pushed.
Yeah, man. I mean, I saw that trailer. I'm like, oh, I think this looks really cute. That was not what a lot of other people have said.
I think when a movie gets pushed a year like that, I don't think it's like, let's just get some space from the actress's comments. Like, that's like a get Greta Gerwig in here and let's figure out what the fuck we're doing with these dwarves. Like, get the CG supervisor, get the VFX supervisor in here. Like, guys, we were doing dwarves. Everybody got mad. We weren't doing dwarves. Everybody got mad. Like, get in the fucking office and like, what the fuck are we doing and how long is it going to take to fix it? Like, that really seems like that's where they're at. Like, we're doing Snow White, guys. That's it. But like, you can just see a bunch of executives like, so is it okay to do dwarves? Is it not okay? We got in trouble both ways. Like, I don't even know what the right answer is. So yeah. I think that's where they're at. And I think the year is just like, we need to, I think the year is just, we need to figure out what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then with Elio, it's probably the same thing. Like, that movie is just probably not where it needs to be. You know, I mean, we even said this, like, I agree with Shannon. I think the trailer is very cute.
Yeah.
But I think, I think Elemental was a wake up call that ended up not being as bad as they thought it was going to be. Like, Elemental was such a bad launch that then ended up evening itself out. But I think that even though it did ultimately even itself out and it's doing really well on Disney Plus for them, I don't think that anybody's like, yeah, Elemental, our hit. Like, they're like, okay, like, guys, we got by. Like, it did fine.
Yeah.
But we're Pixar. We don't want to be, we did fine.
Right.
Like, we don't want to be like, we evened out. It's okay. So I think they're looking at people's response to Elemental and they're looking at Elio and they're like, all right. I mean, well, and not even that, but they're looking at Lightyear. Like, there's definitely some come to Jesus conversations happening within Pixar of like, what have we become? And what are we like? They have the same thing that Marvel had, honestly. Like, there was an era where if a Pixar movie came out, you were just like, this movie's going to be awesome. Like, you didn't even care. What's in it? Is it a fish? Is it a robot? I don't care. It's going to make me cry. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then they sort of, you know, faltered. And recently, they just haven't been what they were. In the same way that Marvel in phase 4 and 5 is like, okay, I'm not there. So I think it's the same conversation. It's like, we have the talent. We have the money. We have the studio backing. We have the consumer product. We have all the pieces that we need to make these hits. And we're doing something that's not right in here. And so maybe they're going to figure it out and fix it. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you guys on everything you said, so I can't add much to it. I swear this is not a Roker's Roundup thing. One last thing. This just came over the wire as well. Lionsgate is moving forward with a Highlander reboot with Henry Cavill as the Highlander and Chad Stahelski from John Wick as the director. So with Neil H. Moritz from The Fast and the Furious producing this, is this a good next move for Henry Cavill? Highlander reboots under the direction of Chad Stahelski, gentlemen, for Lionsgate.
I am not the biggest Henry Cavill fan, and I don't really give a shit about Highlander, and I think this is a great idea.
Okay, Shannon?
Like, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Mike.
No, go ahead. You know, Cavill is one of those guys who needs to be directed correctly. With the right director, he is a very charming leading man. I think even though the movie was not successful, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. under the direction of Guy Ritchie, he is great. Whether or not he vibes with Chad Stahelski, we'll see. But I mean, The Witcher is very popular on Netflix, so they're like, well, Henry Cavill with a sword. Let's go.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll cast a Latino to play the Spanish guy instead of Sean Connery, but I don't know how that worked.
Well, Sean Connery definitely isn't available.
Just stick him up. Anyway, all right, there we go. Those were the thoughts there, the breaking stuff. Sorry we didn't get to the sex study, but I thought this was a much better conversation. Let's take a quick break, and we'll jump into some trailers here from Shannon McClung right after this. And let me say, I do like the idea of Cavill as Highlander. I want to see him under Stahelski's direction, so I'm on board with it. All right, Shannon, trailers, let's go.
Oh, it's trailers, and it's spooky season. And what better way to kick off our trailers with our first look at a movie called Lisa Frankenstein, directed by Zelda Williams, the daughter of Robin Williams. This is the story of a set in 1989, an outsider named Lisa who is obsessed with a Victorian grave, and she ends up digging the guy up and gives him the full Frankenstein treatment. This is from Academy Award winner Diablo Cody. And this one stars Carla Gugino and Catherine Newton and Cole Sprouse. This trailer I think this has the potential to be very, very funny. It also has the potential to be not so good. Post Juno, Diablo Cody's career she's had some hits, she's had some misses. Will this be the hit? Will this be the miss? We'll find out. But gentlemen, what did you think of our first look at Lisa Frankenstein? Johnny, why don't you take it away?
Oh, nothing makes you feel old like the new kids coming up and doing stuff that feels like it's from your decade when you were a teenager. So this one is a 1980s vibe for sure from top to bottom. I love it. I thought like totally killer. It made me excited to see this. And I like the humor in this. I was recently watching Frankenstein. We're doing Frankenstein for the Cinephiles. And I was watching Young Frankenstein, kind of just, I got motivated to rewatch it again. And just love the jokes that you can play with this, right? And the idea of this creating a creature, but there's a darker edge to this. And Catherine Newton certainly has found like a nice little niche here in horror. So to have her lead this one, I think works really well. It's got a Heather's vibe to it as well. So I like that it's a combo of some different things that we've seen before, but still kind of having its own voice as well. So for me, from what I saw from this trailer, this looks delightful. This looks like a lot of fun. It might have a little more of a harder edge than you think with him wielding that axe like that. So I like where it's going and what it might be saying about current society, even though it seems like it's set in the 1980s. Mikey,
will Lisa Frankenstein be alive?
Oh, God.
Because he said that in the movie.
Yeah. No, I got it. The trailer did remind me of the Totally Killer trailer.
Yeah.
And Totally Killer was a really, really good idea that did not execute on itself as well as it could have.
Yeah, fair.
And so, like, kind of that was the vibe I got from this whole thing. Like, the trailer is really fun. It's really interesting. I think sort of doing the teen rom-com version of Frankenstein that also looks really violent and dark, like, is a really fun concept.
Yeah.
That if you do it right, it's great. And if you do it wrong, it'll be totally killer. So I'm curious to see which one it will be. I mean, definitely like Diablo Cody makes me think, all right, well, there, you know, it's got all the right things going for it. Mm. But I'm definitely kind of in a, all right, well, show me more. We'll see. I'm definitely in a, we'll wait and see on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I will say the 2 minutes, however long the trailer was, I enjoyed Catherine Newton more in that 2 minutes than I enjoyed her in all of Quantumania. So I'm hopefully that this seems to be the thing that comedy is what she is doing well. And even though it is a spooky season trailer, it comes out February 9th, just in time for Valentine's Day.
Aww. Oh, that's weird. Okay. All right.
So our second trailer is our second look at the fifth season of Fargo. So the first three seasons of Noah Hawley's FX series, anthology series, were fantastic. They had a pretty big creative misstep with the fourth season. But based off of what we're seeing with the teaser, it was pretty much just Juno Temple. What we're seeing in this second trailer, it looks like they are kind of firing on all cylinders again, as it is one of these, one of Noah Hawley's Fargo shows. The cast is just stacked. Juno Temple is the lead. We have Jennifer Jason Leigh, Joe Keery, John Hamm, Dave Foley, Lamorne Morris from New Girl. Everyone looks like they are just kind of firing on all cylinders. But gentlemen, I'll throw it over to you. What did you think of our second look at Fargo? Mikey, take it away.
You know, as I said earlier, I don't keep up with the Fargo anthology series. But having as someone who doesn't keep up with it, I watched this trailer and was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch that. Like, it looks great. Like, I was 100% sold. When we watched the teaser, I was like, okay, yeah, I get what it is. It's another Fargo season. Maybe I'll watch it. Maybe I won't. But just watching this, like, I mean, I laughed out loud a couple times. I thought it was really, really fun. It was really, really interesting. I love Juno Temple. Like, everything about this looked like a win for me. So I may, this will be where I jump on the Fargo train.
Johnny, does it look like Fargo or Far No?
Dude, no, this is definitely for a yes. I was a big fan of this trailer, and I'm excited to see it because, like you said, season four, not a good season of Fargo. I'm sure it had certain moments. Jesse Buckley was really chilling in that season, but Chris Rock horribly miscast. And so it just kind of threw everything off for me. But this looks like going back to like the movie, because it almost feels like what would happen if his wife escaped them trying to kidnap her, what would happen? And it seems like we got shades of that with Juno Temple. So I like that we're getting this much more active season and interesting characters and interesting actors to be brought in. And this is how you use John Hamm. This is correctly how you use John Hamm in the show like this. This is exactly perfectly how you use him. I don't think he's been used well in quite a number of projects since Mad Men. But this is how you use him, and I liked what we saw. Lamorne Morris, anything. I know he's doing commercials for, what is it, BMO? But God damn it, cast this guy in a lot of shit. Lamorne is so funny. So I like that he's a part of this. It's a nice angle. And Jennifer Jason Leigh, who we are, in essence, in the Jennifer Jason Leighissance ever since Hateful Eight. She's been around and doing some wonderful stuff in different projects. So great to see her being a part of this and brings the right amount of, like, that 80s energy, or the 90s energy rather, into something like this. That is, of course, where the original Fargo came from. So I like that element. So to me, this works so well, and I like where we're going, and it's going to be fun to see the mystery of all of it for sure.
And one of the casting directors for this season of Fargo is friend of the show, our friend Rick Messina.
Hey.
So maybe closer to November 21st, maybe we can chat with Rick a little bit about what his experience was like working on Fargo. So yeah, this one comes out November 24th, right before Thanksgiving. And that brings us to our last trailer, our second look at Maestro. This is the Bradley Cooper directed, Bradley Cooper starring along with Carey Mulligan look at the life of Leonard Bernstein. Now, If you saw the first trailer, you were probably on board. If you watched the second trailer, I imagine you're more on board. That's my guess. But gentlemen, I'll throw it over to you. What do we think of our next look at Maestro? Johnny, take it away.
Oh yeah, I did a trailer reaction for this one. I've been looking forward to this one, so I was excited to see the new one, and I was not disappointed at all. It is so epic in its scope, and it what we're sensing from the trailer, it seems like, is the 50s and 60s are all in black and white, and somehow there's a transition into color into the 70s and 80s, and who knows how much farther they're going down the road with his story. But what really hit me here is this relationship. We're focusing on the relationship between him, Leonard Bernstein, and Felicia, who is being played by Carey Mulligan, and how she understands who he is. She understands what he is. And it seems like accepts his dalliances initially, and the romance he seems to be having with Matt Bomer. But then we see that shot of her later on when she sees them holding hands in the what seems like the Kennedy Center thing or whatever, and she's not necessarily 100% happy. So I like that this is the focus, is that relationship. And I hope people have an open mind going into this, going, she was long-suffering. And fuck that. Relationships are complex and nuanced and have much more levels to it, okay? And so people like this, who exist at an upper tier of life, have a different kind of relationship than normal people just trying to work their daily lives. So there's different things that are involved. And I hope people have a much more open mind to kind of process and accept and see the portrayal of this relationship and accept the nuances and complexities of it all. But yes, direction-wise, Lord God, Bradley Cooper is doing a wonderful job here. Even the film treatment of the shots from the 70s makes it feel like the 1970s. It's genius stuff. And performance-wise, Carey Mulligan and both Bradley Cooper are incredible in the scenes that we're seeing. Even Silverman, in the one or two scenes she has in the trailer, looks like it's not Sarah Silverman. So I like that overall, and I'm excited to see this very soon from Netflix. Yeah,
Mikey, what'd you think? Take us home.
You didn't know he had this in him when he did the A-Team.
Fuck that. Wedding Crashers.
I will say, I agree with everything John said. I was on board with the first trailer, but this trip, a lot of times when we get to the second trailer, we're like, yeah, it was more of the same. Like, I was already on board, but you showed me more. This really did kind of level things up, because that first trailer, you just got like the black and white, and this, just seeing them play these characters in the different eras and really getting a sense of what it was going to say about their relationship. I do think that this trailer really did sort of up the excitement level. I will say, halfway through the trailer, I was like, this is the voice of Rocket Raccoon. I was like, this guy who directed this movie and looks like he is acting for the rafters is the voice of a raccoon whose best friend is a tree. And I love that. I love that that's the world we live in. Yeah, I'm super excited. I can't wait to watch it. It looks like I'm going to be very emotional and cry my eyes out. And then I'll watch Guardians of the Galaxy as a palate cleanser.
And then you're going to watch that raccoon and be like, that guy directs symphonies. That guy writes
that
music.
That guy.
Well, Maestro is opening in select theaters on November 22nd before opening on Netflix on December 20th.
What would you think, Shannon? You didn't say what you thought about Maestro. Did you like it?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, again, whenever I see Bradley Cooper in something, I always go back. I go before A-Team and Wedding Crashers. I go to Alias, where he played like the nerdy friend of Jennifer Garner. So first watching the nerdy friend become the hot guy, and then watching the nerdy friend who became the hot guy suddenly become the cinematic auteur, it's like, man, that guy is on a path.
Yeah. It's like when you go back and watch Remember the Titans and see Gosling being the doofus there playing the song in the locker room, and you're like, what the fuck? This guy's going to be a hunk? What?
I mean, to be fair, if you watch him in Barbie, he's still the doofus.
True. True. I mean, like... But he is enough.
All right.
Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to get into our speculations of what we expect to see in Loki season 2. This is going to be a spoiler, so just a warning here, and we'll be right back right after this.
That is from the theme.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
It's the all high-pitched right, part, if you didn't hear it.
Sure.
All right, well, episode 4 of Loki season 2 aired earlier this week, and we did our spoiler review, it which is currently up on the channel now. If you haven't watched it, go and take a look at it. But we thought we'd make the main topic of our show today our speculation of what we think is going to happen in these final 2 episodes of Loki season 2. This is going to be a spoiler discussion, so if you haven't caught up, thanks for watching the show. You can probably stop here and go on about your day, and when you do catch up, come back and watch our conversation. If you have watched all 4 episodes, hopefully you'll enjoy this conversation we're about to have. Mikey, where we last left off, Victor Timely is spaghetti. And it seems like everybody is going to die from the temporal loom blowing up. Ravonna's been pruned, and Miss Minutes has been shut down or rebooted. And poor Brad will never get to continue his acting career. So your thoughts of where we might be going here in the next 2 episodes of Loki season 2.
Well, so a temporal loom exploding basically means all of the timeline, like there's nothing, nothing is funneling anything into any sacred timeline. Like the multiverse is just wild and wacky at this point. So because the multiverse, all time is existing at once, like when all of these people died, do they all go back on their timelines? Like I'm wondering if like the next 2 episodes are And I don't know how Loki would survive or Sophie would survive, or if them being Asgardians it is remotely different for them or what it is. But is this like collect? Like, do we go back? Do we find out? And again, in a very Ouroboros fashion, Loki, who the series began with him being sort of arrested by the TVA for being a variant on a timeline, does he then become the guy that goes and collects all of the people and puts them into the TVA to start the TVA? Right. You know, like, does Loki end up putting them together instead of he who remains? Like, so there's a lot of, we talked about it in our review this week, that we're in an Ouroboros. Like, that the timeline of the MCU is an Ouroboros, and the Ouroboros was all being controlled by He Who Remains, which was the one Kang who beat all of the other Council of Kangs to be the main Kang and was controlling the universe, and the sacred timeline was there to make sure that none of the other Kangs showed up. Like, let's prune any timeline where another Kang is going to show up. And that in season two, when He Who Remains died at the end of season one, he put the pieces into place to make that whole thing happen again, the way it always had been happening. So that's what we've sort of been watching happen. What the big question that we asked in this week's episode was, is everything that we saw in this episode, you know, Ravonna getting pruned, Miss Minutes and Ravonna sort of teaming up and saying they don't need Kang, the loom exploding, Victor Time, the guy that goes out to say, I'll go instead of Loki or Mobius, is that the way it always happened? Or are there minute differences here that are going to take us into a different area of what's going to happen? Because ultimately, to get to the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, we are going to get off this loop. We are going to get out of this Ouroboros, and something is going to happen, and the Avengers are all going to come together and stop Kang and probably reboot the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. But to get there, I do think the events of Loki season two are sort of leading down that road. So I do think we're going to see Mobius on his... We're going to see who Mobius was before he was at the TVA. I think we're going to see him as his variant self in some way, shape, or form. I think we're maybe going to see the creation of Miss Minutes. And I think we are going to see what's going on with Ravonna before we leave her to wherever she's going to show up again, Kang Dynasty, or wherever she's going to show up. And I don't know that we've seen the last of Victor Timely. I know we saw him turn into spaghetti. But I just have this feeling that he might, not only do I have a feeling that we're going to see more Victor Timely, but I think he might be Kaiser Soze-ing all of us.
Oh, interesting. All right. Shannon, your thoughts on what you think we might be getting over these next two episodes of Loki season two?
I mean, like, truthfully, I have zero idea, which has been one of the great things about the show, is not really having any idea to which direction it's heading, and not in a frustrating, like, where is this show going, but literally, where is this show going? Like, I am pretty captivated by the show, but when you think about a temporal loom exploding, what is it that's actually exploding? It's the timelines. Right. So they're getting a face full of all these different timelines. In my head, you would use some comic book science and be like, everyone is suddenly thrust onto a different timeline. And the goal would then be to get the band back together and fix the mess that has been created. And I think with that, you still could see Victor Timely again. Like, this version of him is dead, but on one of the multiple branches that happened as a result of him getting that book, he could still be out there. But again, I realize that is comic book science and makes no sense in real life. But I am thrilled to find out what is going to happen. And I'm curious how directly this will lead into Kang Dynasty, because looking at what is coming in between the two, and I know there are some films that haven't been announced, but Kang has to show up in some capacity. And whether or not that's going to be in this or if that's going to be in something else, I'm very curious to find out. I think Vogel had an issue with my theory. Did you say your wild theory yet, Mike?
Yeah, we haven't said your
wild theory. Well, the only issue, I agree with everything you said. I don't think this is it, because of it.
your face did not, but please go on.
Well, I just, this is the wild theory, because I know that we saw it happen, but I was thinking about Victor Timely and his entire character and the fact that he's a con man. And one of the things that I had said in last week's episode is I was kind of like, is Victor Timely ultimately he who remains? Because the entire idea of turning the TVA into pray to your Chuck E. Cheese gods is kind of an elaborate con. And I was like, well, if he's a con man, how far does that go? And to your point, Shannon, and you said that this week, he's not a dumb con man. He's very smart. Like, it is very clear in the scene this week with Ouroboros, like, he knew exactly what was wrong with the loom and the problem that Ouroboros and Casey were happening. So he is actually very, very smart. But he's also a huckster and a con man. And he volunteered to go out there.
Right.
He wasn't forced to go out there. So we're all, oh, well, he made this sacrifice. He knew he was the only one. And then we also have this weird chocolate scene that we don't know what it is.
Right.
Weird, like, why the fuck did he really want the hot cocoa and give it to D90? And then, like, what was that about? So here's my weird theory that I don't think is actually true. So when it turns out to not be the thing, but, like, what if he doesn't even have a stutter?
Oh.
What if this is all a con? What if he is playing this sort of...
Is this your Kaiser Soze theory? Is that what
you're saying? Yeah. Like, what if he is, like, this whole thing is a personality that he puts on so that he's disarming and people think he's just this dumb guy and whatever. And he's just taking everything in and he's like... And when he was at the TVA, he was taking everything in. And he seemed to know more about the loom than almost anybody except Ouroboros and Casey, and arguably maybe more than them. And had them attach his probability drive to the machine. So what if, and then when you get to the end and they're like, and Loki's like, I'll go. And he's all of a sudden like, no, I should be the one to go. Right. I'm the one who has to do it. And then he gets out and he turns into spaghetti and we're like, oh, that was a dumb idea. But what if it wasn't a dumb idea? What if he orchestrated all of this to walk out there on his own? And when you turn into spaghetti like that, he knew that was going to happen and planned for it. And he ultimately, this was all part of his plan so that he's going to be the one that builds the TVA the way that he wants it to be built. Mm. And when Miss Minutes said to him at the end, you'll never be him, it's because she doesn't know that, because by the time that Victor Timely builds her, the artifice is gone and he's being this other guy. So when she meets Victor Timely, she's like, this guy's definitely not the guy that built me, but he actually is.
Mm. Wow.
So he gave D90 the hot chocolate to distract him so Brad would prune him. Yeah. So he would then go before Ravonna and Miss Minutes to do X, Y. I mean, if that is, I mean, I hope you're right.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot to unpack, but it's very... The ending of The Usual Suspects was so satisfying because of this journey you'd been taken on. And as Chaz Palminteri is looking at the corkboard, picking out all these little things that Verbal Kent has just said, I hope you are right. Really hope you're right.
It didn't even occur to me. You, Shannon, it was something you said at the end of our spoiler review. If you go watch the video, you'll see the moment where I'm like, oh. But yeah, I was all there. To your point about how his performance as Victor Timely is so polarizing because it's so much.
Yeah.
And just I'm very taken with the idea, like, he's a total con man. And, like, that's a fun thing. And, like, look, if we get to the point where that's what we got for Victor Timely and that's all we got, and then a new Kang is going to show up in the last two episodes and that's the Kang we're going to follow, that'll be fine and I'll be on board with it. But, like, wouldn't it be so much more interesting if this guy that we're like, oh yeah, he's kind of silly and whatever, and what, like, all of a sudden we're like, oh, this motherfucker had everybody's number.
It would certainly answer some of the issues that people have had going back to the end of Loki season one when we first meet He Who Remains, because a lot of people were polarized about Jonathan Majors' performance in those scenes as well at the end of Loki season one. The executive producer, Kevin Wright, told Tech Radar that everyone is going to be seen in Loki episodes 5 and 6. He said, quote, we discussed it as being like a nuclear explosion in the end of episode 4, met with a slow volcanic eruption, but temporal energy is the same technology used in the TVA's prune sticks, so you never know where everyone has gone. And from what we saw and from what you said, Michael and Shannon, but specifically Michael's theory, when we see Kang in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, there's no stutter or no issues there. When we see the Council of Kangs in the post-credit scene, no one is like stuttering or having an issue speaking there. When we see the three that talk, there's no stutter or issue there. So you might be right, because the way they've pitched Victor Timely as a guy is a guy who is 5 to 6 steps ahead of everybody else. So by playing the kind of like, a little slow behind the curve, whatever, he is doing that on purpose so that your guards are down and he can take advantage of your sympathy for somebody like this. And clearly they needed him, and everything could be a work. The Ouroboros thing, the Miss Minutes thing, everything could be a work from beginning to end. And if that's the truth, I think that's going to go a long way, if they do it right, a long way to really establish him as a villain on the level of Thanos, on the level of these other villains that we've had in the Marvel Universe, and maybe solve some of the issues people have had overall with him. So if we get that in the last two episodes, I'd be 100% down with it.
Or Victor Timely is spaghetti.
Yes, for sure.
And that's the end of Victor Timely. And we'll never know why he liked that chocolate, that hot chocolate so much. or that. Like, I don't know. But like, I don't, yeah. I'm refusing to be Mephisto'd again. So I'm just saying, that's what I thought. He might just be spaghetti.
I think we're going to get a lot more with Miss Minutes. I think there's no way they've been leading up to her or increasing her villainy over the last few episodes without that leading to some massive payoff. I just don't think that would make sense.
Well,
and also the Mobius situation of not wanting to see his timeline, his variant or his original timeline. What is it that he's afraid of instinctively? And is that tied to Miss Minutes in some way? So I'm really curious.
I'll tell you right now, just based on the past couple weeks of people's response, mm-hmm. if they weren't planning on going bigger with Miss Minutes, they should be now.
Yeah.
I mean, they should be okay, guys, Miss Minutes is going to be on Battleworld and Secret Wars, right? Like, Miss Minutes is going to be doing some stuff.
Yeah. Anything more you guys want to say to speculate on what we're going to get in the next two episodes? Will Ravonna be the leader of the armies again? Will Brad be acting in movies again? Anything you guys want to speculate?
I hope we get more Brad. I really like Brad a lot. What I wonder about Ravonna, and this is going to be one of those key things that maybe leads to Kang Dynasty and maybe doesn't, is so the Ravonna that got pruned knows that. Let's just assume that she goes through all the pieces and finds the Kang, whether it's Victor Timely or not, helps that Kang become He Who Remains and comes to that place at that window where she's wearing the Minutemen armor and he says the whole thing. Mm. Does that Ravonna remember this conversation and know that Victor Timely is about to wipe her memory? Good point. Is she going to get her memory wiped sometime between now and then? And she doesn't know that and is going to go back on the whole process again. So, I think Ravonna's journey and where she meets Kang and which Kang she meets, like, I think she will still be a big part of the multiversal war and help one of the Kangs become the Kang. But it'll be interesting to see how that all rolls out. And then, like we were saying in our spoiler review, and it'll be the next 2 weeks, the two episodes will be interesting to see, does Loki end up becoming the person who runs the TVA instead of He Who Remains?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And do we get any Marvel cameos? Are we going to get any Marvel cameos? The Marvels is about to come out. Do we get any Captain Marvel?
Maybe Henry McCoy. Oh.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I mean,
hello, Loki. Yeah,
I'm curious to see, because season one was all about Loki starting to go on this more heroic path.
Yeah.
And if that's the path he stays on, or does he go back to being who he is?
Yeah.
And maybe that would line up with him taking over the TVA.
Yeah. And it's a way to kind of keep him out of the main MCU storyline, but still have him as something you can kind of refer to or have appearing in certain cameos and it still works in the canon of the MCU. So that's a possibility.
And like knowing what's coming with Secret Wars, looking at the way that they have adapted storylines in the past, be like, how much from Loki season two is Doctor Doom even going to be our bad guy in Secret Wars? Is it going to be Kang instead? Like, you know, is the TVA going to play some function into how Secret Wars happens?
It has to.
Does seem like it would. I mean, it just seems like since they've built up this place that exists outside of time in the TVA, that when the entire multiverse collapses, using the building blocks of the TVA to sort of build off of and into Battle World, and to your point, like in the Secret Wars comic, ultimately it's Doctor Doom who's the big bad and is kind of using Molecule Man as the person who existed in every reality. Is that Doctor Doom using Kang to control Battle World, and he's really going to be ultimately our big bad in Secret Wars after the Kang Dynasty? Or does Kang win and it's not Doctor Doom at all, and is he using Loki in some way? Like, so again, like, they tend to do a thing where none of the storylines are specifically required viewing for the main event. And that seems like it would be a little too much Loki. I mean, right now we're living in Loki season two, so we're like, yeah, use it all. But I don't know if they're going to go that far. But yeah, I feel like the TVA in some way, shape, or form playing a part into Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars makes sense. And like I said earlier, I would be more than happy to see Miss Minutes rolling around Secret Wars, causing all kinds of mischief.
Yeah, and is this how the Beyonder gets created down the road? I don't know. All right, well, there you go. That's our speculation on Loki the season two, what we expect to see in the final two episodes here. We've been doing the reviews every week, so if you haven't seen that or caught up with that, definitely watch our spoiler reviews for every episode of Loki, and we'll be doing 5 and 6 as well as the weeks go along over the next couple of weeks. So there you go. We appreciate you all hanging out with us for this particular episode, whether you're listening to us or watching us. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKTune. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
All right, well, hey, we like talking about all things geek, and we like talking about it with you. So here is what you can do for us. You can hit that like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, check out all the amazing content he has got there. Leave your comments below. What do you think of all the Marvel news? What do you think of all of Roca's last-minute additions to the show? What do you think of all the trailers? And, you know, what do you think of that sex article that we didn't even get to talk about? Like, just talk about sex below. Let's just get wacky with it. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. If you're listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some stars and some comments so we go up in the rankings there. And as always, the best thing that you can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
Yeah. As the Highlanders say, there can only be one, and this should be the only one you tune into every week for sure. Thank you all so much. You all take care of yourselves. Be well, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode here of the
Geek Buddies.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season 2 even more memorable together.